You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ethan Allen may have become a legend in his own time, but he's perhaps the least understood of all the American founding fathers. Historian Willard Stern Randall tells his story in a new biography called Ethan Allen, His Life and Times, published by Norton. It's the first comprehensive biography of Allen in 50 years, and I'm very pleased that it brings Willard Stern Randall, who is a professor of history at Champlain College, to our show today. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Ethan Allen led the attack on Fort Ticonderoga in 1775. Can you explain the circumstances of that attack?
The revolution had actually broken out in Massachusetts at Lexington and Concord, and the revolutionaries had taken a terrible beating because they didn't have any artillery. Ethan Allen knew that there were French cannon left behind at the end of the French and Indian Wars at Ticonderoga and Crown Point on Lake Champlain, so he sent word to the revolutionaries that he not only knew how to get the cannon, but he had the largest paramilitary force in America, and he was willing to do it.
So the British were not prepared for him to come and try to get the cannon.
They didn't even know Lexington had happened yet. Their communications were so slow. So the gates were open. They were living there with their wives and children.
And you say he was the commander of the largest paramilitary organization, the Green Mountain Boys?
The Green Mountain Boys had formed militias.
Sounds like a country singing group.
Well, it should have been, I guess. They probably would have lived a little better. They were farmers in the Hill Country, 29 settlements, and they had organized because New York courts and landlords were trying to evict them. And they had organized for defense and actually fended off the sheriffs from Albany for 5 years. So they were a good fighting force ready to go.
Now, New York, because we're talking about Vermont, but this is before there was a Vermont?
This is before there was a Vermont. At the end of the French and Indian War, it was empty, basically. Connecticut was overcrowded. People started to go in, buying small pieces of land. New Hampshire was selling charters, 170 town charters, before New York woke up and said, wait a minute, our charter says that that's ours between Lake Champlain and the Connecticut River. So they actually tried to get the settlers to buy the land a second time, and that's when Allen organized the Green Mountain Boys.
But you say that he blurred the line between land speculator and latter-day Robin Hood.
Well, he defended the other settlers, but as he went around, he bought land as cheaply as he could, in large quantities, low money down, and then he sold it cheaply to the settlers, but he held on to a lot of it. The family owned 200,000 acres at one time.
And he was adamant that this area be considered part of New England, not part of New York.
Well, it was full of New Englanders, and there was a different way of life. New England was more democratic. People could own their own land. New England was large estates owned by what became known as the Hudson River land barons, hundreds of thousands of acres, with something like serfdom. The workers were indentured farmers who could never own anything. So the New Englanders wanted their way of life in Vermont.
And Vermont at this time is kind of the frontier?
It was the frontier, very definitely. People moved there. They built a cabin. They planted a couple of acres. They had some livestock. They had huge families, so they needed more land to divide among them. But it was the New England frontier at the time.
And Vermont became a state after he died. Was that something he'd been pushing for?
Well, actually, New York had kept Vermont out of the Congress because they still wanted to claim it even after the Revolution. And Ethan Allen didn't want any parts of that. And actually, he negotiated with the English for a while, kept them at bay during the Revolution. And by the time he died, he thought, well, should Vermont really be part of the United States and assume all of its debts, all of its war debts? We've paid our way. We've broken our own land, built our own houses. And it wasn't until he died, basically, that the rest of the country let Vermont in.
What kind of military background did he have?
None. Self-taught. He had been a professional hunter, taught by the Indians, but he had no real military training. But he was a natural leader, the kind who would jump on a tree stump and inspire the men to follow him.
Well, in theory, anyway, the revolution started because of complaints about taxation without representation. You remind us why the British enacted tax and trade laws and what they meant for the colonists. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, basically, the American colonists were smugglers. John Hancock, who signed the Declaration of Independence. His family wealth was from smuggling. Americans weren't paying any tax. I looked at the records for 100 years, British records, and according to British records, only two American ships ever sailed anywhere. All the others were smuggling, bribing officials, etc. They thought they didn't have to pay taxes. They were putting up their lives as collateral, more or less, for the empire.
So when the revolution broke out, what was his reputation? Had he assumed a role as a political leader?
Oh, he certainly had in the grants, as they were called, in New Hampshire, in the rest of New England. In New York, he was considered an outlaw. There was an act of outlawry and a price on his head. It depended on who you talked to, whether he was a rogue and an outlaw or a popular hero.
And he was growing up in Connecticut initially.
He grew up in Connecticut, northwestern Connecticut, which was then the frontier. And his father started a new town in northwestern Connecticut. Ethan Allen led his family up into Vermont and started over the way his father had. Allen had started communities for years.
And what did he do for a living?
Basically, he wrote a tremendous amount. He wrote several books. And he wrote pamphlets. He would come to your house in a clearing, and he would either sell you some land or a pamphlet for a shilling. So he was a real estate speculator, but he was also a writer. He was the writer of Vermont's cause.
And did he have much of an education?
He had about 9 months of school. He was at being prepared for Yale Divinity School when his father dropped dead and he had to go back. He learned the classics. He learned Greek, Latin, math, geography. But then he had to raise a family of eight brothers and sisters.
Is it odd that he was thinking of Yale Divinity when he came to call himself a deist?
Well, it was his father's idea that he go to Yale. He was only 17 years old. He became a deist, basically rejecting Puritan theology. He didn't believe God could be unjust and be perfect. And deists believed that God was perfect and you didn't need clergy and all of that. So he was very much like Tom Paine. He was working out reason instead of religion.
But you write that the roots of his belief in the freedom of expression came from the story of Anne Hutchinson. Interestingly, Anne Hutchinson winds up moving to New York.
She had to move to New York.
We have a parkway.
Yes,
named
right.
After her.
Anne Hutchinson was tried by Puritan clergy for standing up to the Puritan clergy of Boston. She's really the first American feminist. And she was banished from Massachusetts, went to Rhode Island, and eventually, when her husband died, she moved to Bergen County, New Jersey. So she was very influential on other New Englanders who were critical of the power of the Puritan clergy.
And we all have the Great Awakening evangelicalism becoming popular at the time.
Well, his father, Ethan Allen's father, actually rejected evangelism. He saw it as a political movement as well as a religious movement. And he took his family away. They moved away from Litchfield, Connecticut, into the wilderness, into the frontier to get away from
it. How aware was he of the ideas of the British Enlightenment?
I think he was quite aware, just from what he quoted in court and in his writings. He as the first published American deist philosopher, he took the writings of English deists and put them together with the thinking of Franklin and Jefferson and Paine.
So he was influenced by Paine, or Paine influenced by him?
Paine was influenced by him. He knew Paine. He had met Paine. But Paine wrote Age of Reason 10 years after Ethan Allen wrote his Reason, the Only Oracle of Man.
This even extended to medicine, didn't it? There was a whole to-do over smallpox inoculation.
Actually, after Ethan Allen started studying deism, he decided that any law that would not protect human life by evoking religion was insane. So he had himself inoculated in front of the Puritan meeting house on a Sunday.
They were opposed to inoculation.
It was illegal, and they were opposed for religious reasons. They didn't believe in any intervention. And so he was actually thrown out of that town for doing it.
When people argue that America started as a Christian nation, do you remind yourself that Ethan Allen and others were deists?
Oh, I do, because Christian is sort of a term that's been stretched almost to the breaking point.
Well, would he have thought of himself as a Christian?
He would have thought of himself as a Christian. He actually said, I don't know what a deist is. I've never read their stuff. That may be a bit of a stretch. But like Franklin, Jefferson, Washington, they were all experimenting with new ideas of religion, and they were in and out of deism themselves.
He was held as a prisoner of war by the British during the Revolution.
Horribly, for 34 months.
Where was he captured?
He was captured when he tried to take Montreal with 134 men and failed.
Was he acting on his own, or was had he been sent by the Continental Congress?
Congress had given him a commission. His Vermont neighbors had taken it away. They were afraid of reprisals. So he went on his own and did recruiting. But he had pretty much an authorization to strike wherever he could. He had no support. The British treated him horribly, and in fact, his case of how he was treated, which he wrote up in his own memoir, the second best-selling book of the Revolution, influenced Washington, Jefferson, Madison, and became our prisoner of war policy even in the Civil War, an eye for an eye.
At one point, he was taken to London, where he was treated really miserably.
Well, he was taken in chains, in irons, in the hold of a ship across the Atlantic in winter. When he reached England, there were crowds waiting for him because they had heard about Fort Ticonderoga. He was a hero. The British had a secret cabinet meeting the night after Christmas, 1775, and said, we have to get this man out of here. He's an awful lot of trouble. Pro-Americans were trying to get rid of habeas corpus. And it was the interpretation of the British government that you couldn't serve habeas corpus on a ship. So Ethan Allen and his fellow prisoners were put on ships. They were sent to Bermuda, North Carolina, Halifax, finally New York. But that whole idea of not using habeas corpus comes down to us now, even at Guantanamo.
And he was told that he couldn't leave Long Island when he was brought here, but he violated his parole.
Well, of course he did. He was Ethan Allen, yes. He was living on clams at New Lots in East Brooklyn, and he was supposed to stay within a township and be in by dark. But he crossed over into Manhattan. Everybody recognized him. They knew who he was. And when he went back, he badmouthed the British government, and they threw him in the Provost Jail, which is the old City Hall, in solitary confinement.
Now, did his memoir have an impact other than becoming a bestseller?
Main impact, didn't it? He identified other Americans as much greater enemies, the loyalists, than the British. People were sort of losing their fervor by that stage of the Revolution, 1779. He stirred up such animosity toward the loyalists as Judases and betrayers. The first thing he did when he got back to Vermont was to hang a loyalist. And then he made his living confiscating their properties, which is how Vermont paid off its war debt with the property of loyalists. But he thought the loyalists, as he called them, the intestine enemies, were the real threat, not the British.
After the war, Paine paid a price for his religious beliefs. What about Ethan Allen?
Ethan Allen was, you could say, burnt out of Bennington because he took everything he had and self-published a 550-page book attacking Christianity called Reason, the Only Oracle of Man. Only 200 copies were distributed before there was a mysterious fire in the printer's warehouse in Bennington. Some say it was God using lightning. Some others say it was a printer trying to keep his job.
When you're writing a biography on someone like Ethan Allen, where do you look for new information?
I'm a former investigative reporter, so I look widely at the public record. I go outside of Vermont. I look at British, Canadian, and American records, the records of other founding fathers, and sort of look from the outside in. There's plenty that we haven't plumbed yet on that period.
You teach in Vermont. Is he considered a local hero?
He is, but he's sort of considered part Davy Crockett, part Paul Bunyan, and two parts Jack Daniels.
Because there's so much myth around him?
Mostly myth, and I've been trying to penetrate that myth with this book.
We hear the Founding Fathers brought up over and over in political discussions. What's Ethan Allen's particular legacy as one of the founders of this country?
A spirit of dissent and of resilience against any kind of misfortune. He's a champion, really, of the dispossessed who started over again. Vermont became the place to start over again, I think, thanks to Ethan Allen.
How did his name become attached to a furniture company?
I have no idea. His father made some furniture for the house, but had nothing to do with Ethan Allen.
Somebody just decided that's a nice name.
They had a factory there. They had nice wood, and he was so well known there, it resonated with people.
William Stern Randall is the author of 12 books, including Thomas Jefferson, A Life, George Washington, A Life, Benedict Arnold, Patriot and Traitor, the most recent, Ethan Allen, His Life and Times. It is published by Norton. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you very much.